Quick disclaimer before we start. We finished recording this episode right before the Suns matched the Pacers' offer sheet for DeAndre Ayton. It doesn't really change the content of the episode, but we do talk about how this impacts Phoenix's ability to trade for Kevin Durant. And by matching the offer sheet for Ayton, the Suns can't trade Ayton until January 15th, and they can't trade him for a full year without his consent. So he basically has veto power over any trade. So this basically takes DeAndre Ayton out of any possible offseason trade scenario involving Durant. On today's Locked On NBA, the Pacers have signed DeAndre Ayton to an offer sheet, starting the clocks on a big decision for the Suns. What comes next and why this could shut the door on Kevin Durant going to Phoenix. Plus, a favorite emerges as the most likely Donovan Mitchell destination. We'll tell you who it is. That and much more coming up next.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA, however you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Mattes. On today's show, the Knicks lead the way for Donovan Mitchell, and we have our top players from Summer League. But we begin today with DeAndre Ayton, who agreed to a four-year, $133 million max offer sheet with the Pacers, and the Suns now have 48 hours to decide whether or not to match. Adam, are you surprised by the number, which is the largest offer sheet in NBA history? And what do you think the Suns should do next?
I'm not surprised by it. And I think the Suns should do the only thing that they can do. I mean, they kind of put themselves into this corner. And I don't see a scenario where you could just let him go. It would be a catastrophe for a team that's on the doorstep of winning a title. So I think you have to match. The question is, you know, what kind of hole does this put you in long term? I don't think Ayton is going to be their guy long term. They certainly don't want to commit that kind of money to him. Otherwise, they would have done it sooner. So I think this puts him into a just don't let the disaster happen. You sign him to the deal, and then you try to move him at December 15th or your earliest convenience. And I think that's probably how this is going to shake out. But, you know, the number is high. I think he's worth it personally. I've actually surprised at the conversation for DeAndre Ayton and people talking about, oh, that's kind of rich. I think he's a great young player. And if you're Indiana, you had to make the numbers sort of absurd. You had to go all in to give yourself even a chance for him to be lured away from Phoenix.
I'm with you. I look, there are guys who are legit max players in the NBA, and then there are other guys who aren't but earn the max. And DeAndre Ayton's probably more in that in the latter camp, but that's fine. This is just what you have to do. I mean, you're a team that just won 63 games. DeAndre Ayton was a really big part of that. I just can't fathom any team just letting him walk away for nothing. A guy who you just took number one in the draft only a few years ago over Luka Doncic and Trae Young and all these other difference makers who all got their max extensions. And you're not willing to shell that out for DeAndre Ayton. But if there was a team that was going to do it, wouldn't it be Robert Sarver and the Suns? And so I have no idea what they'll do. If this was any other team, I'd be like, all right, cool, Indiana, you really went for it. Good for you guys. But obviously Phoenix is, or whatever team is going to match this. I would say that about any team if it wasn't Robert Sarver's team. So I don't know.
It's funny, by the way, Wes, that restricted free agency is so weird anyway, especially, and DeAndre Ayton is kind of the perfect guy here in that, to your point, he's not like a clear surefire max, like a Jokic or a LeBron or somebody, a Steph Curry, somebody like that, where you're like, of course, he's worth so much more than that. So of course we'll give him max. He's one of those guys that's a little bit in the gray on that. And the fact that he's in restricted free agency creates the scenario where Phoenix has to do what they've done up to this point and what they're posturing to do now, at least through Woj, in saying, oh, we'll match. You go ahead and do that. You're going to waste your time. We'll match. But now we do get into that interesting moment here where it's like, maybe they were bluffing.
Right. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually do it. And look, if the Suns just won like 43 games, maybe they do just let DeAndre Ayton walk. Hey, you know, you want to maintain some semblance of cap flexibility and whatever. This is a team that was on the doorstep of the outside of some collapse against the Mavericks. They're in the Western Conference Finals on the doorstep of a second straight finals appearance, right? And so I just can't imagine taking a step back. JaVale McGee signed elsewhere. I don't know. Like they've traded away or Jalen Smith. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do at that position. We know Chris Paul wants that lob threat. You have a finite window here with Chris Paul as your lead player. It just made so much sense in the world to just let Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton just sort of take the torch from Chris Paul and carry you into the future. I mean, all of it lines up from a basketball standpoint. I just, they're hung up on this number maybe. And I don't know, man. I would be if I'm a Suns fan, I would be so upset if they let him walk away for nothing.
Here's what I think is going on, Wes, a little bit of this, is that DeAndre Ayton, I think you want max caliber guys to be guys that you're 100% sold in, want it, you know, are going to be like not just great players, which I think we already right. know that he is, but that you feel confident giving that much money to someone because they're not about the money. They're about, hey, we want to win. But they're about both, but they're about, right. hey. And I think that there are just questions around DeAndre Ayton. Is he that guy? Is there any risk that you're going to hand him $100+ million and he's going to say, sweet, got the bag, I'm good. I don't really care about all this extra stuff. I'm not going to grow into a leader on a team. I'm not going to grow in the areas that I need my game to grow. I got 6 years basically to kind of get to that point. And I think that's the thing. You're always worried when you're an organization, especially when you're competing, that you're going to hand somebody something on talent and not necessarily on what you think they're going to do with that talent as a leader. Unfortunately, you can't play that game. Guys come into the league at 19 years old. They reach this stage at 22, 23 years old where you have to make that bet. Very few people are fully formed adults at 23 years old. They're still discovering themselves. And I'm guessing that is why there haven't been more teams that were chomping at the bit to get DeAndre Ayton. And I'm also guessing it's part of why Phoenix is slow playing this. The thing is, he's talented enough that you probably don't need to worry about that too much.
And the Suns are a really talented team where you could kind of withstand maybe any sort of friction there, I guess. But the other part of this too is that if the Suns do match this offer sheet, that DeAndre Ayton can't get traded until mid-January, but they also...
Is it January? It's not December?
It's January 15th, I guess, because of the restricted free agency part of it. And can't get traded to Indiana for a full calendar year, right? And so if the Pacers are the only team that's interested in DeAndre Ayton, which apparently that they are, then I don't, like, some people are saying, well, just sign DeAndre Ayton and just trade him by the deadline. It's like, okay, that you can't trade him to the Pacers for a right. whole year. Maybe you could trade him after that year, but whatever. Ayton also has veto power on any trade for that
that's
year.
That's right, too. For 1 year.
So that's part of it, too. So if you're just, like, the only reason Phoenix doesn't match the DeAndre Ayton offer is if you're just so completely out on DeAndre Ayton as a person, like you were talking about. The other part of this is sort of the domino effect it has on the rest of the NBA and how the Pacers turning in this offer sheet, basically forcing the Suns on the clock for 48 hours here. How does this impact Phoenix's ability to trade for Kevin Durant? Because Ayton right. was the obvious sort of centerpiece in any sort of Durant deal. Now, I know that there were some hoops that they would potentially have to jump through with the sign and trade and Brooklyn being hard capped. And, you know, you got Bobby Marks on ESPN saying that Ayton would never have been able to be part of that. I don't know. I haven't done the math myself and I'm not going to try to, because that's not reliable, because I'm not good at it. But, it kind of feels like there's a little bit more clarity here, whether or not Ayton gets signed especially if he ends up on the Pacers. Does that mean that Phoenix is sort of out on the Kevin Durant chase, or maybe it makes it a lot harder to get him?
Well, first of all, we know that Vegas had the odds with Phoenix very high. So this idea of, like, you couldn't have done this deal anyway, where there's a will, there's a way. Did that mean you had to shed Ben Simmons and go somewhere else? Because he was the piece that would hold this up with the rules about rookies on max extensions. Would you have to find another home for him? Would you have to do a three-way trade where Ayton went somewhere besides Brooklyn? So this idea that it couldn't happen, Vegas disagreed. Vegas had said Phoenix has a very good chance of doing this. So I kind of put that to the side. I do look around, though, and I don't know how closely you've been. I know you covered the Warriors, you know, very recently. You look around at some of the things that have just been leaking out. We know that Kevin Durant may be interested in going back there. We know Steph Curry has been open and maybe even recruiting, maybe even reaching out and saying, hey, this is how this would go. I look at this and I go, Phoenix was one option. And even if it gets diminished a little bit, we do see Phoenix as the front runner to land KD, take a little bit of a hit. And meanwhile, the Warriors are picking up steam. And I think that's a big development for the NBA, not just for the Warriors, but for the NBA.
I would still be very surprised if KD ended up on the Warriors. The other part of that, too, is just like with all the rookie designated extension things, Andrew Wiggins is one of those players. Right. And so now you run into that whole Ben Simmons deal. Like, you have to find a third team for Ben Simmons. And that's another sort of hoop that they had to jump through. I don't know. I just know that Phoenix, like, their best offer is Mikal Bridges, really good player. I really like his upside. I don't know what Brooklyn thinks about him. Cam Johnson, good player. Kind of like what he is as a long-term role player. Picks, like, that's kind of the offer now. You know, the other location that Durant listed was Miami, right? And I don't know that the Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson plus picks is better than Kyle Lowry, Tyler Hero in picks. I think those are probably about even type of packages. But yeah, well, who's to say that a team like the Warriors doesn't come through and say, hey, here's Kuminga, here's Jordan Poole, here's James Wiseman, like whatever.
They have the assets. To me, the Warriors are the team that has all the pieces to be able to get that done if they want to. I can't imagine they would want to. This is, or I should say, I can imagine they would want to. I can't imagine Kevin Durant would want to, and maybe he has no say in this because we know that literally he has no say if the Nets say they don't, you know, they can trade him without his permission. But I have to assume that they would factor in what he wants just for the goodwill that they're building for other free agents. But to me, I look at this and I go, how on earth could Kevin Durant go back there? I just don't understand it.
I don't see Joe Lacob doing it, if I'm being honest. I know that it's out there and Joe Lacob. I think Joe Lacob would be out. I think he likes the attention, be like, if anybody's going to do it, it's the Warriors.
Man.
Old Joe Lacob, never count him out. I think he likes that kind of attention. I just think he's been so committed to this two timeline thing with Kuminga and Moody and Poole and Wiseman and this stuff, where if you get Durant, who's going to be 34 years old at the beginning of next season, you're pretty much ditching that two timeline approach. And this is not the Warriors winning 73 games and losing in the finals. This is a Warriors team that just won the finals. You don't really need Kevin Durant according to recent history. I just wonder if Joe Lacob thinks that. I don't know what Joe Lacob really thinks about this, but I actually think he's been so committed to these rookies and kind of being the next Spurs that I don't know that he would be interested in kind of going backwards and doing the whole Durant thing again. I don't know that he would. Maybe he would. Maybe
I have to imagine that the money you make when you bring that team back together and you very likely win the next three championships, maybe beyond that, that far outpaces whatever it is he hopes to get from Moody and Kuminga and Wiseman, as good as they may be, that you just say, you know what, I'll cry into my pillowcase full of money in 4 years while we have to go through the lottery a couple seasons to rebuild.
How many more pillowcases of money does Joe Lacob need? He's probably got like a million pillowcases filled with like $1 billion each right now at this point.
He'd have a lot more if he got Kevin Durant to go back to the Bay.
Maybe. All right, we'll talk about Donovan Mitchell next and where he may end up. The Knicks looking like the favorite, but maybe there's another team that's a dark horse to maybe land Donovan Mitchell. That's coming up next. First, BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports information. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including on this NBA free agency and Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Back here with Locked On NBA, we'll rank our top players from Summer League in a bit, but let's turn now to Donovan Mitchell, who, according to The Athletic, seems destined for the New York Knicks. Sham Sharania and Tony Jones both reporting that, quote, the Knicks have emerged as the focus destination, end quote. And that both sides have discussed the framework for a deal. Of course, the Knicks have 11 first-round picks available between 2023 and 2029. Some young players like RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, Emmanuel Quickley. And speaking of BetOnline, just recently came out with odds that are even for the Knicks. 1-1 odds. That means if you bet a dollar, you win a dollar, which means don't do it. There's no point. Adam, what do you think about Mitchell's
story?
What do you think about Mitchell's fit in New York potentially? And if you're the Knicks, is it worth parting with multiple young players and picks to get Donovan Mitchell?
Honestly, I'm lower on Donovan Mitchell than most people. So part of me goes, is it worth it? I don't know. It feels more sideways than anything. But knowing what the Knicks want for themselves in this new era, you know, with new leadership in that front office, it kind of makes sense. Do I think that it makes the Knicks contenders? No. Do I think it makes them more interesting? Probably, at least in the short term. And I've always felt like, even with the Jalen Brunson move, they were trying to make moves that would set the table for future moves. You get your team to be good enough that people no longer view you as a joke, which is kind of what the Knicks are right now. Like, all these free agents over the last decade have said no thank you to the Knicks. You get yourself up to that respectable level, and then the big names are like, okay, 3-4 years of them being a playoff team, of them being respectable, I'm ready to commit, I'm going all in. And you grab the next wave, should that be a Luka or a Zion or whatever the next wave of superstar is that is trying to force themselves to a big market. If we think about it right now, Brooklyn, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, Miami, those are your glamour markets now. The Knicks are not in that discussion. A move for Donovan Mitchell, I think, puts them back in that as long as they don't collapse over the next two seasons.
If Donovan Mitchell ends up on the Knicks, he's got a top 10 selling jersey overnight. He is a immediate superstar in a way that he never was in Utah. Not that, you know, he's suddenly a better player in New York, but he's going to be the face of that franchise, for a franchise that has needed a face basically since Carmelo left. And he would be the most talented player to come through. Now, I've heard people say, well, you already got Jalen Brunson. Are you really going to start 2 6-1 guards in that backcourt? Those are first world problems, and the Knicks are not even close to having to deal with those things right now.
They upgrade the first world problems, right?
Right. And so, and just, you know, I understand sort of the basketball logic behind it, but from a just a front office logic, I am not getting Donovan Mitchell because I have Jalen Brunson. That also doesn't make sense to me. You know, like, why would I not increase my level of talent if I'm that high on Donovan Mitchell just because I have this other really talented guy who I just signed for nothing in free, or, you know, didn't have to give up anything in free agency, just down to my rotten cap space. So I do think that this makes a lot of sense. I think it doesn't make the New York Knicks favorites in the East, not very close at all, especially considering if they have to give up somebody like RJ Barrett to do it, but it makes them better than what they are. And like you said, right now they're just a joke, and, you know, maybe their ceiling is like Damian Lillard, the CJ McCollum era Portland Trailblazers. That's a lot better than the Knicks have been over the last 30 years. So that's a huge improvement. If you're just a perennial playoff team, like you're saying, now you're getting some steam, you're getting some momentum. And if you're that in New York versus doing that in, say, Portland, that in New York has a lot more cachet than having that in Portland or another small market.
The flip side of this, though, for Donovan is that I don't think he's been an overrated player because I don't know that – I don't know where he's rated, you know. But I do think that – a lot of people view him as like this cornerstone. If he's not one, like the number one guy on a championship team, that he's like 1A or 1B, you know, alongside another one. And I don't know. I just have a little bit of questions about that, about whether he's that guy. And then also he's been disgruntled with the one superstar he's played with. Now, whose fault is that? Who knows to say? I don't know. But you don't get a second chance at that. You kind of get one where everybody says you didn't get it done in Utah. You had the 3-1 collapse. Right. You know, you kind of didn't get along great with Rudy Gobert, but maybe that's Gobert's problem. I don't know. You go to New York where the pressure is a lot bigger, and all of a sudden, if this happens again, if the defense, for example, is terrible, and by the way, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, not exactly my first two options for a defensive backcourt. So if you go there and don't get it done, that pressure is going to pick up quite a bit. But it's the least kept secret. This is like when LeBron went back to Cleveland, you know, like we saw it for 2 years before it actually happened. Like this is one of those moves. Everybody's been talking about Donovan Mitchell wanting to go home, go to New York. So the fact that those odds are 1-1 are kind of hilarious.
It really is. Second on that odds list, at least last I checked, were the Miami Heat. Obviously, they've been mentioned as a potential suitor for Donovan Mitchell. Andy Larson of the Tribune reporting that the Heat actually made an offer and that the Jazz basically said, no thanks, get another team involved, get some more assets, et cetera. You know, maybe that makes sense. I've heard Brooklyn as another potential suitor, but, you know, if the Heat are competing with the Knicks, the Heat can't compete with the Knicks. They have, like I said, 11 draft picks between now and 2029. Miami does not have anything close to that. Brooklyn, kind of the same deal, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're looking at. Maybe there's – I know people have thrown out, like, three-way deals that have Kevin Durant going one way, Donovan Mitchell ending up back in Brooklyn. I don't know. You figure it out. I'm not going to try to figure that out. So, you know, maybe something like that, but – it just feels so clean and so easy for Mitchell to end up in New York.
Yeah, I think it happens, and probably sooner rather than later. We're recording this, by the way, earlier in the afternoon. So who knows? Maybe it happened by the time you listen to this.
Maybe. And you know how we feel about it as a potential fit. Coming up, our top rookies from Summer League. That's coming up next here on Locked On NBA. All right, it's Friday, which means we're counting down to the weekend. And today... we're looking at our top five players from Summer League. Just a few players who have caught our eye, who have stood out to us. Adam, you and I were both in Las Vegas for what felt like too long. Summer League is still happening. I was there for 4 nights, I think. How long were you there?
Thursday, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Same thing, 4 nights. That is an eternity, man. It's a grind.
I took a 6 a.m. flight on Monday. I did not sleep on Sunday night.
So that's the worst. All the way back to Miami, that's not even a short flight.
It is not a short flight. I was not happy on Monday. I was not a happy person on Monday. That was not me. How's this? I'm going to try to make this a segue. There are some happy players / teams in Summer League. That wasn't good. Right.
Why don't you say...
where do you want to begin with this?
Players who were taking flight in Las Vegas themselves.
Oh, there you go. That's better. I'll let you start.
So I've wanted to start. These are like, usually we do a countdown list. Any countdown list for Summer League sounds especially hot takey. So I just have a list of players that I thought were interesting. This is like...
in no particular order?
Yeah, it's not even an order. It's just top five guys, interesting guys. Number one on my list, speaking of New York and maybe possibly Utah, Quentin Grimes. Draft pick last year, high upside guy, has spent a year basically away from the spotlight. He looked great in Summer League, man. And the thing that looked great about him, and we knew he was going to bring defense. We knew he was kind of a winner. He was going to bring a lot of these traits. The thing that stood out was his three-point shot, which Summer League is such a small sample that a guy can be hot and you can be like, ooh, he improved his shot. It's like, no, he had a good shooting weekend. I don't know what happens. And I kind of feel that way watching the shot. Some of the shots he took were like kind of wild. Like I look at him and I go, is that going in consistently or is it just going in right now? But either way, it was going in right now a lot over the weekend. So Quentin Grimes, a guy that he looked like a player to me.
Good enough for him to be part of these Donovan Mitchell reports, right?
That's right.
One of the guys that Utah would be asking for. I'm with you. If that three-point shot goes in, the defensive stuff, the tools were always there, just sort of this toolsy guy coming out. And if he could become this like legit 3-and-D guy, he could fit in a lot of different teams.
And he had one ice-cold game, so again, maybe a little bit regression to the mean there. But he's just a guy that does a little bit of everything. 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds. He ended up averaging 24 points per game over 3 games. Like, that's a lot. It's one of the highest. Let me see, where does that rank amongst all the players in Summer League? It's got to be pretty high.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Next on my list, my guy. I've got a new guy. It's not Herb Jones. It is Herb Jones's teammate, though, Trey Murphy. I'm telling you, man, I think the Pelicans nailed their wings, their young wing upside here. Trey Murphy is averaging 26.5 points in his 2 games over Summer League. He's too good. Shut him down already. He's too good. Second-year player. We got 2 games out of him. He shot 50% from the field. His 3-point shot a little bit off, but 7 rebounds and assists. I just think Trey Murphy, to me, everybody talks about the return of Zion, rightfully so. That's a big thing. Trey Murphy, I think, is going to be in the Herb Jones conversation next year where they're like, oh, they've got a bunt. You know, it's just another young piece that they have on that roster.
I liked him a lot coming out last year. Speaking of Herb Jones, how do you feel? We haven't talked about this, that the Nuggets drafting Peyton Watson, the guy that was comped to Herb Jones during the entire, like, did they do this for you, Adam? I feel like they did.
Did they? They might have done it. I don't know. I will say, we'll see with Peyton Watson. Like, how tall is Herb Jones? Because
they're like the same size. I think like maybe Peyton Watson's an inch shorter, but Peyton Watson's big and long, man.
He's got really long arms. Look, I'm rooting for it. I like Peyton Watson. You know, he averaged 3 points per game in college, which is very scary. It's the fewest ever of a first-round draft pick. So
yeah,
we'll see. But you're not wrong that if he's the next Herb Jones, I'm going to have to totally divorce myself of Herb Jones and go after my own guy here.
Ooh, some drama potentially brewing here.
There you go. This next guy, man, just shows up statistically, but I got to say I'm not a believer. But I had to put him in there because he is the Summer League leading scorer. Even though he's played 3 games, it's not one of those guys that played 1 or played 2. Played in 3 games, 30 minutes a game, 29 points a game. Basically a point per minute that he's on the court, and that's Cam Thomas. Bonafide bucket getter. Now, his team hasn't been good. In fact, I think they've lost every game, which maybe there's something to this. But Cam Thomas, he's another guy that just looks so much better than everyone, at least as a one-on-one player. If there's a one-on-one tournament of Summer League, I think he would win in a landslide.
Brooklyn finding maybe their Kyrie Irving replacement in Cam Thomas. Easy peasy. I don't have to worry about it. I've always liked Cam Thomas's game, but I have a soft spot for like irrationally confident bucket getters who don't play defense. Like for some reason, it's the opposite of the Herb Jones soft spot that you have. Like you love non-factors on offense who work their tails off defensively and really make an impact. I'm the opposite. I just want a guy who is way too confident for his britches and just,
you know,
and
what? I'm that way. Where am I from? I'm in Denver. I'm the blue collar, hard hat, lunch pail. You're Miami, man. You're glitz. Yeah, you're
all
glamour.
Flash. Yeah, no all substance, flash, baby.
The next guy I have here, you're going to laugh at this one. You're going to laugh really hard. He only played 2 games. He's not even, I don't want to call him a second year Summer League guy because he's really like less than that somehow. Matt Ryan. Have you paid attention to Matt Ryan right now?
Matty Ice.
Matty Ice, man. Matt Ryan, Boston Celtics. He has 10 3-pointers over 2 games on just 18 or 19 attempts. That's 53% from the field on 3-pointers. This is a guy that I know his story is great. I don't know if you saw him breaking down. He had an interview after his summer league game where he was breaking down, you know, just talking about the journey he's been on, driving Uber a year ago, working some of these odds and ends jobs a year ago. I mean, you talk about a guy that if you 1 year ago, if you asked like, hey, man, are you going to be in the NBA on a real contract? It'd have been like a joke. And here he is, not just getting that contract, but certainly making the Celtics feel a little bit better about giving him that deal, because you watch him come out here in summer league and he's performed. So again, not a name that rings out, but a guy that I'm like, hey,
great
story. And he's standing out.
Yeah. He might've driven my Uber in Vegas summer league last year. Who knows?
That would be the wildest story. If you were driving Uber in Vegas for summer league, there you are. Last guy I have here, I call him Cam Thomas Light, because that's the way he plays. Josh Christopher, 20 points per game over three games. The efficiency, not necessarily there, 39% from the field. What's the three-point percentage look like? 12.5%. He's made one three out of nine attempts, so it's not exactly a huge volume here.
I got an opinion on Josh Christopher. His free throw routine, very strange, takes forever, longer than Giannis probably. and he plays a little wild on the court. I'm not the biggest Josh Christopher guy, but Rockets fans seem to be happy with him.
I think he's going to be a first team all summer league. He's going to look great in summer league next year too, before falling to like Europe or something. No, maybe. He's better than that. He's better than a European player, but he's just a bucket getter who's going to shine in this. Those are the second year guys. Did you want to say anything about the Warriors are going to rely really heavily on their trio, second and third year guys? Any of them stand out in what you saw from them?
Well, really impressed with James Wiseman, his first couple games out. Obviously, it's been a long couple of years for him. Coming back from that injury that kept him out of all last season. And, I thought he came out aggressive, took a three early, had an alley-oop early in his, like within the first, 60 seconds, he had both of those in his first game. And, he got in a bunch of foul trouble in all the games and stuff like that, but that's to be expected with a guy who hasn't played in as long as he has. And that's all right. Especially in summer league when you have like unlimited fouls, or it's like 10, which might as well be unlimited. I think that if you're the Warriors, you've got to be excited. And then, Moody scored 34 points one night, didn't play the next night or something like that. He's sort of been a little up and down defensively, hasn't quite been there to the level that you would expect. And then Kuminga has been, really great sometimes and then just sort of a non-factor other times. But I think we're going to learn a lot. Like the Warriors are putting a lot on their plates during summer league. They're obviously sort of running a lot of things through them, giving them a lot of opportunities. Moody is like being the lead ball handler in a lot of these sets and stuff like that. They're getting the ball to Wiseman and Kuminga on lobs and things like that a lot. So they're test running them, right? They're putting the miles on now because they know they're going to need a lot from them to replace their depth that they lost with Otto Porter going out, Gary Payton going out, and all these guys. So they're going to rely on them a lot, but I still think there's going to be quite a bit of a learning curve there.
Yeah, I think so too. The guys real quick, just to run through my list of rookies, those were all second year guys, but Tari Eason to me has been maybe the
awesome.
He's maybe been the guy drafted the lowest that's just shined the most. He really looks like a lottery pick type guy. I mean, I know a lot of people had him as a fringe guy right there, but the thing about him is that he doesn't have like very sharp fundamentals, but still does stuff. And that has been even more true so far in summer league. So he's looked great.
Eason and Banchero, those two guys specifically, I think with summer league, guys who are just top like 1% physically, athletes, they just stand out. You mentioned Easton's obviously a rookie. He's got a lot to learn. Summer league, you're not running like complex sets. You're not doing like really tough, difficult, complex things on the court. So like when you just have guys that are just so much bigger physically and better athletes than even these other guys that are just trying to make the NBA, obviously Easton and again, Banchero have solid spots in the NBA right now. They just stand out, and I think Eason, that's what stands out to me. I mean, he looks like a guy who could guard all five positions. Offensively, it'll probably take a little while, but there's stuff like he could dunk. He's powerful. He can cut to the rim. I like him a lot.
He's just, he'll definitely enter the NBA already ready for like the biggest physical matchups. I don't know if he'll be skill wise there, but physically he'll be there. Keegan Murray has obviously been like a guy that has dominated. I mean, he's looked fantastic. I know Kings fans have to be excited there. Then you've got Banchero, as you've mentioned. I mean, he's the number one pick. Like, you expect him to be good, and he has. He's looked fantastic. Chet Holmgren, of course, right there. And then I have to give a shout-out to two guys, surprising guys. First of all, Josh Minot. He's tailed off a little bit. He started hot, had a medium game the second one and a bad one the third one. So he's starting to maybe cool down just a little bit. But then Sandro Mamukelashvili. I might have done that right. Mamukelashvili. He's been great. This is a guy that was there so you get the announcer, the cheer. He is a guy taken in the second round from Milwaukee, spent a year in the G League, and now he looks like a guy who, I don't know what he is, but he's intriguing, and he's certainly been a star of Summer League.
Well, I think that's the – what's his name?
Sandro Mamukelashvili. I probably screwed that up as well. Yeah. We're learning it. 21 points, 10 rebounds, three assists, three turnovers, three stocks. He's been doing a little bit of everything in Summer League.
Well, he's the star. He's doing his best. That's all we try to do is do our best here on the show every week. That's a wrap for us. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA, wherever you listen to podcasts, for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. In the meantime, you can find me over at Locked On Heat and Adams over on Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day.